This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
Zoom in on a map of Paris and you will notice a spiral configuration of lines dividing up the city. The arrondissement system of neighborhoods is one of the defining elements of the character of Paris. Your solo travel advisor, Astrid Clements, spent time in the 16th arrondissement and has some advice, some stories, some recommendations. The full Astrid Report. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. Astrid says her Paris trip was fabulous. Let's find out why through the lens of the 16th arrondissement. Astrid, I'm really excited to hear everything about your recent Paris trip. Each arrondissement has a reputation or a feel to it. Remind listeners about the character of the 16th arrondissement, and did you find that it lived up to the expectation?
Catherine, you're so right when you say each arrondissement or neighborhood has a special or distinctive character that so many travelers that visit Paris really don't realize that each one is different until they get there, or actually they know what to look for. Just a little bit of a review on some of the other arrondissements until I get into the 16th to kind of paint the picture of how the 16th is different from the others. The first arrondissement is basically where the seat of the old French royalty was in the regal power. It's where the Louvre, the Tuileries Garden, where Place Vendôme are, the Palais Royal. It's basically the character of elegance and royalty. That's what you'll find in this area. When you come up onto the Louvre, you just know that, oh my God, France was really powerful and the elegance that exuded out of that era. It's so beautiful. The fourth arrondissement, you've got Notre Dame, Île Cité, where everything started in Paris. And one thing I realized in doing some of the research on this particular show and the different arrondissements and the 16th, is that the Notre Dame is actually more visited than the Eiffel Tower, which I thought that that was an astounding fact. But also in the fourth, you've got the Marais district, which actually was an old swamp that at one time was the Jewish enclave. And it has some very beautiful architecture in there. But now it's a haven of artists and designers. So that's kind of the feel of the fourth. Then you have the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh on the left bank. The fifth is basically the Latin Quarter, the University of Sorbonne. It's got an intellectual feel. The sixth, Saint-Germain-du-Prés, which that was where the 20th century writers and intellectuals hung out, Simone de Beauvoir, Ernest Hemingway. It was just a real kind of sophisticated but very, I guess you would say, liberal type of feel. And it still has that, but it also is now a very upscale or posh, sophisticated area with boutiques, art dealers, galleries, and beautiful antique shops. You've got the seventh that is still on the left bank, where you've got the fabulous Musée d'Orsay with all of the wonderful Impressionist art, etc., and the Eiffel Tower. Then you go back on the right bank, and you've got the eighth, which is the Champs-Élysées, the Arc de Triomphe, Faubourg Saint-Honoré, and Avenue Montaigne. And please, I cannot pronounce these French names. It's horrible. I speak German. My mother was from Berlin. I was raised by German grandparents, and I have this kind of Germanic, I guess, intonation, even in my English. But I cannot pronounce these French words with the French accent, so I apologize. The ninth, you've got the gorgeous Opera Garnier and Galeries Lafayette. And the 18th is edgy and bohemian in character with the Montmartre district as well as Pig Alley. So these are the areas that most people visit when they come to Paris, including me. Most all of my past visits have been in these areas because it's where the most famous sites are, where most of the wonderful restaurants are, and definitely where some of the most fabulous shopping is. But on this recent trip, I wanted to explore the 16th because I knew there were some overlooked gems there. Now, the 16th basically is considered the posh, very chic area of Paris where the high society live. This is really the most affluent area of the city. It's where the old money has lived for centuries and still do live there. And it's been described as quiet and charming, and it is very charming. It's on the right bank, and it is the largest arrondissement in Paris, and it's actually made of three smaller neighborhoods. You have Passé, you have Trocadéro, I think that's how they say it, but I'm sure it's Trocadéro, and Auteuil. But it's characterized by wide boulevards, these gorgeous 19th century French buildings with the wrought iron balconies and the beautiful doors and just the way that they treat all the different architectural details. I mean, the buildings in this area are beautiful, and many of the old or former embassies were in this area. So these buildings and the personal mansions there and everything, it's really beautiful. So it's got gorgeous architecture. Then within these neighborhoods, there are all these little small parks. So I know in many paintings you've seen, especially in the Impressionist paintings and post-Impressionist, these parks, these small parks where children are playing, and they're all over this area. More so in this area, I think, than any other area in Paris. Also, well, it's not the largest park. It's actually the second largest park, but it has a huge park called the Bois de Boulogne. It's 2,100 acres, and it used to be the royal hunting ground for the kings and the queens and the royalty, but it's really considered the Central Park of Paris, but it's like three times bigger than the Central Park. It has hiking trails, it has ponds, lakes. It's just beautiful. If you want to get lost in the woods in Paris, in the middle of this big city, it's just beautiful. Now, I would suggest doing it only in the daytime because it can get dangerous at night, but it is beautiful. I would say probably the whole character of this area is similar, not in look, but in feel to the Upper East Side in New York City or, say, Kensington, Chelsea in London. But elegant, wealthy, and conservative is how I would describe the 16th arrondissement. And to me, it's the most untouched and really the most authentic area of Paris. And it's the least affected by modernity, which I think is wonderful. You don't have all this horrible traffic congestion. The people seem to be much more relaxed. They definitely have kind of a chic look and just air about them. I would call them very self-assured, but it's in a relaxed way. It's not in an uptight way or like they're stressed over something that they have to do or they're rushing. No, there's no rushing really in this area. And really the pace here is much slower than any other area that I have found in Paris. The cafes and the restaurants are frequented really mostly by locals. So you really get this feel of what it is to be a Parisian. Mm. I don't think you can get that as easily anywhere else. I was imagining this to be the case before I left, but when I was there and really experienced it, it is the case. So I especially like that. Plus, it's close enough to all of the other arrondissements where all of the major sites are, the very famous museums, as well as the fabulous restaurants and shopping. The hotel that I stayed in was a 5-minute walk from the Champs-Élysées. And once you hit the Champs-Élysées, all you have to do is go left or right, and you're within 20 minutes usually of anything you want. So the 16th arrondissement is a very good place in terms of location if you want to explore all of Paris. And then, of course, it has great metro. Paris has a wonderful metro system, and there are lots of stops in the 16th. So if you do take the metro and you don't want to walk, that's no problem. So I have to say that basically I fell in love with the 16th because it was so relaxed. There was an elegance in this area, and this all spoke to me. So that's, Catherine, really how I would describe it. It's a place of relaxed, self-assured, and warm French feeling that is very, very Parisian. And you get it there. You don't get it as much in the other areas. So you might get some of it, but it has a different slant on it. But here, it's kind of what I would consider the real thing.
That sounds really nice. The description of the park alone makes me just want to get over there right away. My goodness.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And it when you go into the Bois de Boulogne and you get into it, you can't believe you're in Paris. You feel like you might be in an old forest in Finland or Spain or some faraway place. It's beautiful.
So you said you did a good job of setting us up about the different styles of the arrondissements and the 16th itself. So tell us now, get us into your actual trip. How was it staying there?
Okay. For those of you who have listened to my prior podcast or have read my blogs dealing with my hotel selection fetish,
expertise,
know that I'm a stickler for finding luxury hotels that are affordable and that have character. There is nothing more off-putting to me than a luxury hotel that's cold, too corporate, or what I consider systematized, expensive to boot, and usually half empty. I really love to find hotels that have that special something. And these hotels I have found usually are not owned by large corporate groups. So on my Paris trip in 2017, I stayed in a wonderful hotel in the first arrondissement, the Hotel Regina. In fact, I've done a blog on this and a whole podcast on this wonderful hotel. But it was across from the Louvre, and it was really one of the chicest boutique hotels I'd ever stayed in anywhere in the world. And I'm going to go into this because it ties into the 16th and what it was like to stay there, etc. So, okay, just bear with me because this is one of my stories. And I think it captures something about understanding Paris and loving Paris. And if you do capture the real essence of it and understand what Paris is all about, you seem to gravitate to those real things, those places and experiences that are truly what Paris is all about. So stay tuned, listen to this story. So in this beautiful Hotel Regina, basically the hotel itself was a 19th century Art Deco building, and it was filled with French antiques that were very well taken care of. This was not like an old Parisian hotel that had seen its heyday. It was very well done and very well kept up. It had two wonderful gourmet restaurants in it. It had a very popular English bar where locals frequented. And that's one sign when you are in a hotel and you see locals come into the bar with their friends for an hour or two after work or whatever to have a little drink or a rendezvous, you know you're in a place that's special because most locals don't go into hotel bars to have a drink. They go into their neighborhood watering holes or whatever you want to call it. But this was a special place. It was very comfortable, very beautiful. In the interiors, it was intimate, and you could spend hours in there and really not want to go up to your room and go to bed. It also had a very wonderful concierge. And that's very important when you stay at any of these hotels, because in a big city like Paris, you need the service of the very fine concierges, because it can get very difficult to get into some of the things that you want to do if you haven't had your reservations before that. But also, I found out when I stayed there that this hotel was owned by a family that had owned it for 5 generations.
Wow.
And when I heard that, I knew that there was something about that family who had preserved this beautiful structure as a hotel, and that they wanted to keep the feel of staying in Paris a real Paris experience. And I really valued that, because that spoke loud and clear to me about the family and about how the hotel was run and why the hotel was so special. So I share all this about the Hotel Regina because when I was researching to stay at the hotel on the 16th, I keyed in on this hotel called the Hotel Raphael. And it was advertised as a place of timeless elegance, where you could enjoy past Parisian glamour with a fresh, luxurious twist. Basically, a 7-story Parisian palace. Because I can stay in, anybody can stay in the more modern hotels or even the luxury hotels that have been updated and have a more real modern feel. Here again, I like to find the hotels that have the authentic character of the city or the place where I'm visiting. So that's important to me, and I just want to preface that. But also in the advertising, it said, no rooms or suites are the same. They're all different.
Oh, wow.
It had 47 rooms and 36 suites, a gourmet restaurant, an English bar, Gold Key concierge service, and one of the best rooftop restaurants and bars in Paris. Now, when I went in the winter, it was closed, but you could go up there and enjoy the view. And when I tell you, the view is fabulous. The Eiffel Tower is right there. I mean, you're almost on top of the Arc de Triomphe. Paris is all lit up at night. You can see Sacré-Cœur. Really, this is truly one of the top rooftop places to enjoy a drink or a meal in Paris. And it's beautifully done. It's landscape beautiful with formal hedges and flowers. I mean, it is the real thing. So it's very chichy on the rooftop of the Hotel Raphael. And they promoted this hotel. It's 5-star, and it was owned by the same family since 1925, and I started going, I wonder if this was owned by the Bavarez family, the same family that owned the Hotel Regina. I just thought, that's kind of odd. But maybe it wasn't, but it did strike me at that point. The photos of the interior were beautiful. You walked into this gorgeous, long, broad salon with black and white marble, typical Parisian, with these big oak carved columns and this antique furniture, just like a grand salon that you entered. And that's where you checked in at a very small kind of desk, which was very kind of chichy, just gorgeous. It had a beautiful restaurant that you entered in. It had this gorgeous silk brocade looking curtain, all of these huge serving trays in carts that were silver. I mean, the old Paris that you would know and be able to enjoy. I mean, it just hits you right there. They had beautiful oils on the walls, even an original Turner. The English bar, very beautiful. And it was similar to the bar or the look in the bar at the Hotel Regina. All of the chairs and the couches were basically antiques, and they were covered in that dark red velvet, just like at the Hotel Regina. And I thought, this is beautiful. Then the rooms, oh my gosh, the rooms, they had mirrored doors not just a regular door, but like in Versailles or in the real formal kind of old French hire, or what I'd say more formal interiors. Mauve silk fabrics, antique painted woodwork, wrought iron private balconies, wood floors, oriental rugs, antique furnishings. Let me tell you, it is the real old Paris, and it's not old and musty. It is very well kept up. Price was $345 a night, which incidentally was the same price as Hotel Regina. And to me, it's the best bargain in Paris. I think the room should be $650 minimum, maybe $700. Oh, yes. All of the five-star hotels in Paris started around $850 to $1,500. The hotels are bigger, for starters, and there are more things within the hotels themselves, like spas, etc. But as far as the true Parisian experience, let me tell you, for $345 a night, I think it's a fabulous, fabulous price for the quality. So I was sold when I saw all these photos and the price. But something was telling me, dig a little bit deeper about this hotel. I had read the reviews. They were all good. So I started to look into the history. And here again, it was built in 1920s, Art Deco style, by Leonard Tauber and Constant Bavarez. And I went, oh. They said it was a popular venue for well-known French international artists, politicians, and famous personalities. Several movies had been done at this hotel, two of which, one is Love in Paris and Place Vendôme, Ava Gardner, Katharine Hepburn, Henry Fonda, Clark Gable, Grace Kelly, Marlon Brando. These were just some of the regular guests at the Hotel Raphael. So yes, I found out this hotel was owned by the same fifth-generation family, the Bavarezes, that owned the Hotel Regina. I was amazed, basically floored, that out of all of the hotels that I was considering, I chose this very special one. And I thought that this family connection was a sign to me that this hotel stay would be something that would be very memorable. And it was. It was so over the top that I'm going to do a whole podcast on the Hotel Raphael, on this family, and there are three hotels. I have one more hotel called the Hotel Majestic, which I haven't stayed in, but the photographs are also very beautiful. And the Hotel Majestic is in the 16th arrondissement. I have a feeling that this family, they might live in one of these hotels, or I'm sure they probably live in the 16th, because I just had a feeling that they were always around. I didn't get to meet any of them, and I actually asked the concierge, but it just didn't work out. But the Hotel Raphael is something very special. So that is the beginning of how wonderful my stay was in the 16th. As far as what it was like to have the 16th arrondissement as your home base, it was really superb. It's just as I expected. It was very safe, very clean. Beautiful streets and boulevards to walk through daily. Wonderful neighborhood restaurants. The first day I was there, after I had landed, the first meal at night that I had was at La Stella. Oh, this is a neighborhood restaurant. It's a brasserie that's been open for over, I think it's about 200 years old now, if you can believe that. But it's still going strong. Fabulous seafood there. Oh, my gosh. Another one was Cafe Viet Tien. It was a Vietnamese cafe right across from my hotel. Wonderful breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The decor inside is so beautiful. And there were others along the way. I remember one breakfast, I had a croissant, and they advertised a cup of warm milk with vanilla. Now, I'd never had warm milk with vanilla. So I decided, that sounds pretty good. I want to try this. I love coffee, but something made me feel adventurous that morning. Oh, It was more relaxing to drink that than a cup of tea. So I haven't tried it yet at home, but warm milk with a little sugar and vanilla. Oh, yum, yum, yum.
I feel like I just got a whiff of it. It's just, it's divine.
It was divine. And it was surprisingly divine because I thought it was going to be good, but maybe a little too sweet, or maybe I should have had it in the afternoon and not more. No, it was like your grandmother serving you something to make your day start wonderful. It was really good. So they had a wonderful little restaurants all around. Terrific location, basically two blocks from the Arc de Triomphe, and the Champs-Élysées was 5-minute walk next door to the Peninsula Hotel. And this is what's considered a palace hotel, better than 5-star. It's a very famous building that the Hong Kong group bought and was the Hotel Majestic, the original Hotel Majestic that the Tauber and the Bavarese family also built. And it had been the headquarters for the French after World War II when the Nazis left. And it has a lot of history in that building. In fact, one of the waiters told me that the peace accord for the Vietnam War was signed there. It's a very special place. Well, it's been completely redone. And when I tell you, it is gorgeous, it's gorgeous. So two nights I went over there and had a drink in their gorgeous bar. And they also have like a beautiful terrace out front. And it's as good as it gets. So if you want super duper luxury, you can just go right across the street or next door to the Peninsula Hotel. So basically, it was close to everything in such a wonderful Parisian feel. I loved going home to my hotel at night. It was exactly how I wanted to experience the 16th.
That sounds fabulous. I can listeners, I wish you could see the glow that is on Astrid's face right now just talking about it.
Well, I love Paris so much. I mean, I always have so much deja vu when I go there. And I'm thinking, in my next life, I will be a Parisian. But, you know, when you go to big cities, especially Paris, too, there's so many tourists and it's a hustle and bustle and everything. You still are in Paris and the beautiful buildings and the gorgeous light and the wonderful food. And you go to the museums and the shopping. I mean, it's just a sensory overload that's all good. But you are in kind of that hyped up vibe when you're in most of the other areas. But in the 16th, you don't get that.
Well, I liked what you said about before, the sort of the old world Paris. That's really coming through, that it's not the new tourist dominated. It's really something special and different.
Yes. And I've found the people there to be more warm and, like I said, relaxed. I've talked about Parisians and the way they act to foreigners and all this, when you do something wrong. But I didn't get that, or that off-putting, why are you here? You know, or whatever, you don't know what real quality or whatever is. You know, you're just an American. Mm. I didn't get that there. They just reek with a relaxed kind of warm class. I like that very much. I felt like that if I stayed there for a while, I would make some nice friends.
Mm, that's nice. So our listeners have the upcoming episode about the Hotel Raphael to look forward to. That'll be really good to get into all of that. I know that you also have some real must-dos and must-sees for the 16th arrondissement. What are those?
Okay. So I've been talking a lot about really the feel, the character of the area, which I might have painted a picture that there wasn't that much to do there. It was basically like a nice, quiet, boring place of Paris. Well, not true. Not true. For starters, there are 8 major, well, there's actually more than 8 major museums, but there were 8 major museums in the 16th that I really was interested in. Now, I didn't get to visit all of them on this trip. I only got to do 5, and I'm going to go through those and then tell you about the other 3. But there are some other museums, too, that are very noteworthy to go see. One in particular is the History of Man, and they have a huge aquarium in this one area. I'll be going into where it's located, because that's one of the areas where it's located that is a must-do. But let's talk about the museums there, because they have some fantastic museums in the 16th. The first one I'm going to highlight is the Musée Moton-Monet. This museum has over 300 Impressionist and Post-Impressionist paintings, mostly by Claude Monet. It's considered the largest collection of Monet paintings in the world, and most of these paintings were donated to the museum by his son. But you'll also see Degas, Manet's, Sisley's, Pizarro, Gauguin, Pierre-Auguste Renoir. The museum itself is housed in a gorgeous three-story Napoleonic mansion. And when I tell you this museum is out of this world, it's out of this world. It's small. It's three stories. It's small compared to the other major museums. But the furniture, the artifacts on how these people lived, and these paintings are unbelievable. I mean, I spent almost 3 hours there because it was ethereal. It was so beautiful. So it's one of those jewels that unless you take the time to go there, you're going to miss. But it is not to be missed. If you really like that classic French impressionistic art, oh, it just oozes out of this building and all of those paintings. It's amazing. So I consider that a must-do. And what's so nice about it, it's small, and they regulate how many people they let in and out. So it's not one of these experiences where you have so many people around, and it's so huge, and you almost tire of everything because of all the people and everything that you're seeing. It's like it's too much of an overload. But this museum is special. Highly recommend it. Must do. The next one is the Musée Bacharach. Now, this is a museum. It's actually a private museum showcasing Bacharach crystal, the famous French Bacharach crystal. Oh, let me tell you, it was fabulous. It, too, was housed in a mansion. It was the former mansion of Marie Laurée de Noailles, or whatever. I didn't pronounce it right. It's French. But she was a force. She was touted as the most powerful art patron in Paris of the 20th century. What you see in here is lots of this gorgeous Bacharach glasswork, the vases, the dishes, the stemware, special commemorative pieces, things like chess sets, ornate chairs in Bacharach crystal, chandeliers, real works of art that you couldn't see anywhere else but right in this museum. And it gives you even more appreciation of what beautiful crystal in all different forms and uses can look like that is French. Like you just think, oh my gosh, to live in the day where they use those just like for everyday meals, etc. Oh, wow. So it is beautiful. Then in this museum, you've got a fabulous restaurant called the Crystal Room Bacharach. It's very sophisticated and elegant. It is actually in her dining room, her big dining room where she had all of these gala events. The interiors are beautiful now because they contracted with Philip Stark, and he basically has a little bit of a modern touch to the seating areas and how he did the chairs and the banquettes and a few other of the accessories in the room, but it's in this old setting. So he's kept the chandeliers and some of the brickwork, and it's beautiful. And there's a setting in there that is beautiful. The chef is Michelin star. His name is Guy Martin. And also in this museum, a gift shop that is absolutely so tempting that I almost want to tell you, if you can't hold on to your credit card, don't go in there because it is gorgeous. And there's price ranges. The lowest is probably about $50 for some kind of little small trinket, but they have all price ranges in there. And of course, they ship and you get to see everything. And say if you've been collecting Baccarat and certain things you can't find readily, when you go to this museum, they can get it for you. So it's wonderful. I really consider this a must-do. You know, if you love beautiful things, this is a place where you just really feel that French elegance that is part of the dining experience and part of the interior decoration that is so characteristic of France.
Regular listeners know that you are a true shopper. So if you're telling people to hold on to their cards, you better watch out when you get into that gift shop.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did have lunch there. And I must say, the lunch was fabulous. And, you know, it's all set with the Baccarat crystal and everything. And they had the little Baccarat butterflies that everybody knows about on the table. And I loved it. And I thought, well, I'm having a dinner party for Christmas. Maybe I'll buy 14 of these little butterflies because they're considered good luck as party favors. But I restrained. But I almost did because it was hard to restrain. Because the way that they did it, it was such quality, simplicity, but it made a real statement. And it was a token of love, and it came through. So I loved the museum. I loved eating at the restaurant. And I loved the gift shop. But I must tell you, it was very hard to resist. So if you want to get that Parisian or that French experience in terms of their aesthetics, this is a good place to go to have lunch, you know, two and a half hours. And what was so nice in the restaurant, I don't know if there were any tourists in there. It was really all locals. So that tells you something. When the locals are going to eat at a restaurant that's in a museum. Okay, next museum. I know I'm talking about a lot of museums, but there are lots of things to experience in museums, and especially really fabulous museums. They're worth the time. The next one is the Foundation Louis Vuitton. Oh, gosh. Now, this has nothing to do with clothes, purses, shoes, nothing. This is a fabulous new structure in the Bois de Boulogne. It is definitely, first of all, a must-do. The architecture of this building is really like a giant piece of sculpture. It was done by Frank Gehry, who is probably the most famous current international architect for statement buildings. And this building is out of this world. Its roofline has all of these big, like flying fish scales. The whole building is really like a piece of sculpture. I cannot describe it to you because it's out of his creative fancy. And it was built. It was beautiful. And I think it cost something like $165 million. But it is so beautiful that it's very hard to process when you're looking at it, that somebody could create this in their mind, put it on paper, and it actually be built. I'm married to an architect, and I love architecture and have learned a lot by being married to him. And this is just out of this world. All I could think of is, I wonder if this building leaks, but I didn't see any evidence of. But it is gorgeous for starters. And the gentleman, Bernard Arnault, and he's the head of Louis Vuitton, or was, he basically wanted Paris to have an extraordinary space for art and culture, and it is extraordinary. It has 11 galleries in it, and its focus is on contemporary artwork. They have both permanent collections and current exhibitions. This time when I was there, they had two exhibitions, one by Egon Salais, and I know I'm pronouncing that wrong, but he is one of the top 20th century Viennese artists, loved it. And then Jean-Michel Basquiat, and he is one of the most significant 20th century painters. both of those exhibitions were wonderful. I just loved them both. And I just told you about the Musée Martin Monet, which all of that gorgeous impressionistic paintings. But this contemporary and totally different, but equally very, very stimulating and really, it's just very enriching to go to see what these artists, how these creative things are expressed on paper. I loved it very much. Their permanent collections, it's divided into three different things or sections, pop, impressionist, and music and sound. In this museum, too, a fabulous restaurant called the Le Franc, Michelin star, chef Jean-Louis Nomisco. It seems like these museums, they are all fighting to have these Michelin star restaurants in there, which is so unique. That, to me, just shows you Paris. You don't see that all over the world very much. I mean, there are some good restaurants and some very fine museums, but not like in Paris. I mean, these really good ones have Michelin chefs in theirs. And then they have a great bookshop and gift shop. So if you want to pick up something really nice, it's in this Foundation Louis Vuitton. Also, it's right next to the Jardin d'Acclimation. Now, this is a 45-acre park that has 150 gardens and also like an amusement park for kids, but that's kind of back off the side. But it has gorgeous footpaths to walk in, a big dovecote, which all of these exotic birds, when I tell you, exotic waterfowl was all over walking around, and they have this lake and this kind of canal, and you go over this bridge and the peacocks are flying over, and these exotic looking chickens and all these birds were just, I probably took 30 pictures of birds. It was beautiful. And I write here in my notes, stunning. The whole experience at the Foundation Louis Vuitton was really stunning. So I recommend spending minimum 2 to 3 hours. And it's best to go late in the day because you don't want to go when there's lots of people there. And get your tickets before so you don't have to stand in any line. Yeah, those are good tips because that's one thing about Paris and in the larger museums is a lot of people. And when there are a lot of people, the experience is not as good. Okay. Next museum. Now, I know I'm talking about a lot of museums, but these are all museums that are extraordinary. I mean, there are extraordinary museums in Russia, in St. Petersburg, and in New York, and in other big cities, but there's nothing like Paris. Nothing. And these museums are all worth going to see. Even if you don't like art, I can tell you, when you go to these places, you will begin to appreciate what real art is all about. And so that's why I'm taking this time to go through them. The next museum is called the Palais de Tokyo, which is really weird name to me because it's not Japanese in design of the building. There's nothing Japanese about the gardens or anything in this museum. I don't know why it's called the Palais de Tokyo. I didn't find that out. But it's an avant-garde art museum, and it houses the former permanent collection, the contemporary art collection that was in the Petit Palais. You'll see works by Matisse, Bonnard, Villiard, Leger, Deschamps, Nemours, and it really showcases the development of contemporary art from the 20th century till today. So you'll also see Cubist paintings and pieces of art, post-Cubist, Surrealism, and New Realism. So it really gives you a real good spectrum of contemporary art and how it evolved. Wonderful. And it's totally different than the foundation for Louis Vuitton, because Louis Vuitton has the current exhibits, which this museum does too, but this has all of that art that was originally housed in the Petit Palais. Then the temporary exhibitions, the one that they had currently that I visited was called On Air. Now, this was the most high-minded, far-out art exhibit I'd ever seen in my life. It was a series of, I think, 12, maybe 15 rooms, some large, some small, that had gigantic spider webs housed in plexiglass in a pitch black room with lights. And the whole focus of this exhibition was to show you the properties of air, the subtlety of air, and how to harness it to do things, and how it's so important in life. And they use these spider webs to show you just how intricate or how subtle it was. Like, they would do sound in one room, and they had these long, long pieces of spider thread, and they'd play these sounds, and you'd see how the spider web, there was no wind or anything pushing it, but how the sound would move it. And then the head, when they had slight wind, and it was so far out. And then they talked about how harnessing air rather than using fossil fuel and everything. And it was so high-minded, I thought, I have to go back and buy a book and study this to really get it. But it was very thought-provoking. And I can't do an adequate job to describe it, because I have to say, I couldn't process it all. It was something, and they would do certain things with light and how it would move those spider webs, the little threads of the spider webs, just the light. Oh, it was something extraordinary. I mean, you talk about some intelligent, high-minded, creative people that could put that together. Hmm. Whew, that was something to see. It totally took me aback. When I walked in there on air, I thought, what is this all about? Walked in there in these huge black room with these lights and these enormous spider webs in these plexiglass boxes. I just couldn't believe it. The next room had more spider webs, but it was focused on something else, showing a different property of air, etc. Another thing that I thought about, this couldn't happen in the United States. I hate to say it, but they would first of all think, oh, well, this is not handicap accessible, and I don't mean that derogatory, but maybe somebody will start a fight in here. It's too dark. It's not safe. But in Paris, it was so civil in there, and everybody was just in a state of thought, and it created this. So here again, I think it's almost, you can only experience something like that in a place that is really on a high level. And you get that in Paris. Also in this fabulous museum, you've got two Michelin star restaurants. It's amazing.
We're on a Michelin star tour.
Yes.
Here. Oh my gosh.
This is all in the 16th arrondissement. Hmm. People don't realize this. These are jewels. The first restaurant is Monsieur Bleu, and this is the one I went to, and it is fab. Now, it is not old Paris at all. It's very chichy. It's where the beautiful people or the in crowd come to dine, because you can sit outside, overlook the Seine and the Eiffel Tower. It's like the Eiffel Tower is like right there. You could hug it. Or you could dine in inside. Oh, the inside was gorgeous, very contemporary. But first of all, I had these enormous chandeliers with these four big kind of cube-looking rounded lampshades. And they were huge, these chandeliers. And this green and kind of taupe and beige stone on the floors. So everything was kind of grays and off-whites and taupes and these beautiful green, kind of lime green flowers, which was like what was threaded through that stone. I've never seen stone with kind of lime green the way this was. Beautiful. Then all the waiters were in white shirts, black pants with dark navy blue suspenders. Monsieur Bleu. Bleu or blue. And the food out of this world. I had steak tartare there. And the steak tartare that I had did not come in the typical kind of wafer looking with the egg on top. This was in a bowl, and it was all lined in this bowl, and it had all of the herbs and everything and the spices in it. And the whole presentation was fabulous. The glass of wine that I had there was fabulous. Sitting there, people watching was fabulous. This room was fabulous. And this was all in a museum. It blew me away. It really blew me away. Beautiful place. The other Michelin star restaurant in the Palais de Tokyo is Tokyo Eats, and it's really a cafe. And lots of kids are in there and everything, but it's still Michelin star. So this is basically a very classy, contemporary place to spend 3 or 4 hours. And I consider it a must do because it gives you a totally different feel of Paris, in modern Paris. And it's very she too. It is cool. Okay, the next museum is the Musée Yves Saint Laurent. Now, this is really, I guess you'd say, for people that like fashion, because it exhibits Yves Saint Laurent, the famous courtier, his whole body of work in the presence of his couture house, in the mansion where he lived and worked. So you see 30 years of his designing collections, basically from 1974 to 2002. I loved being in this mansion. I could just feel his presence in there where he lived and worked. And, you know, he had a tortured kind of, I guess you'd say, dark side to him. Oh, man, he had all kinds of issues that plagued him throughout his life. But he was the real thing. When it comes to real couture and fashion design, Yves Saint Laurent was it at his time. So you get that essence of that soul in that building. You can still feel it. But you see wonderful photos of him at different stages of his very colorful life, all the collections, the different collections through the years, whether it's haute couture, ready to wear, all the jewelry he designed. He even designed theater costumes, and you'll see his sketches and everything. Oh, yeah, he just loved women, and he loved design, and you can see it. The evening wear, oh, my gosh. And some of the fantastic things that, the very forward-thinking things that he designed. I mean, I know some of his key things, like his safari jacket and that Moliani dress that he did, and he loved that, what I call that electric Morocco blue that he made so famous, and several things. And then you also get to see his office and his atelier, actually where he was working and some of the things. I thought it was fabulous. And really, part of the mystique of Paris is centered around fashion and fashion design. So this is another place. Even if you don't like fashion, an hour and a half at the Musée Yves Saint Laurent, I think it'll be memorable because he was, like I said, he was the real thing. So in my book, it's a must do. Now, here's another tip. Buy your tickets advance. Don't just show up there because this is a very small place. Not very small, but it's small and a lot of people are going there. So there's only a limited amount of people that they let you in at a time. And your ticket has a time slot on it. So if you miss that time slot, you cannot go in. You have to buy another ticket for another day or another time. So that is an important tip. Okay. I only had 5 full days in Paris, and I could only take wow. 1 museum a day. So those were the 5. But the other great museums in the 16th include the National Museum of Asian Art, or the Guimet. Now, this is considered the largest Asian art museum in Europe. It has over 20,000 Asian art objects. Wrap your head around that. And I wanted so to visit this museum because I love Asian aesthetics. They were the original minimalist. Their design is, to me, very refined, and I love it. I take to it. I don't know why. I mean, I love Parisian interiors, and I love Asian interiors. Now, go figure. And there are not a lot of museums all over the world that focus on Asian art. I've been to one in Dallas that I thought was very good, but nothing like this. And this one has art from China, Japan, Korea, Afghanistan, South and Central Asia. The museum's supposed to be stellar. So I consider this a must-do. And for my next trip, this is the first museum that I'm going to go to because it's rare. It's rare, and it has so much in it. So I think this is something very fine, and it's in the 16th. Okay, the next one is the Palais Galleria, and this is the City of Paris Fashion Museum. Now, this is the permanent collection of the history of French fashion from the 18th century to the present day, and it's housed in a gorgeous Renaissance-inspired palace. Now, this might be an overload for people who are not into fashion. I particularly like clothes, but this is supposed to be the mother load, really. But they have clothes owned by Marie Antoinette, Empress Josephine, all of the leading 19th and 20th century fashion designers and how their styles evolved. You'll see all kinds of undergarments, the beginning of underwear, fancy French underwear to now, accessories, hats, canes, jewelry, fans, purses, scarves, gloves, parasols, umbrellas, and of course, graphic art, photography. If you like fashion and French fashion, this is where fashion really started. This is something else. Well, it was closed, so I couldn't do it. And that's why I didn't make this top five list. And actually, when I went in 2017, I didn't go to it either because I had some other things that were a higher priority. So I've tried to visit this place twice. So hopefully the next time I'll go, because supposedly the refurbishing that they're doing, which was the reason why I was closed, will be open sometime in 2019. But if you're a real fashion lover, this is something that you probably will thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy. And for me, maybe the third time will be the charm. I'll get to see it. But I think it's something very, very special. And that's why it's made my list. Now, the last one is the Musée de Vin, or the Museum of Wine. So wine lovers, listen up. This museum is kind of like in a monastery setting that kind of has a Middle Ages feel, but it has over 200 artifacts and informational panels about the making of French red, white, and rosé wines, champagne, and cognac. All kinds of information about vintners, wine masters, coopers, wine experts, everything you want to know about French wine is in this museum. Plus, at the end, you get a tasting. So you get to pick whatever you want to taste from there. They have their own vineyard called Chateau La Bastière, and I'm sure I've mispronounced it. But this is a vineyard in southwest France, as well as it has a restaurant, of course. Now, I don't know if it's Michelin star. I'm not sure about that. But you can have dinner there or you can have wine and cheese tasting. So that's it for my museum selections in the 16th. They do have others and other important ones, but these are the ones that I thought showcased really France or something French in a different way or something that was completely astounding. So the next, we'll talk about the restaurants. And I have to admit that on this trip, I didn't really focus my restaurant selections only in the 16th. I mentioned two already to you, the Cristal Room at the Musée Bacharach and the Monsieur Bleu at Palais Tokyo, both Michelin star. I didn't eat at the Lefranc in the Foundation Louis Vuitton, but it's also highly recommended and Michelin star. So those are three that you could kill two birds in one stone. You can go to the museum, and then you can eat a very fine meal. Okay, three more highly recommended restaurants in this area, which are also Michelin star, are number one. Well, two of them are in the Bois de Boulogne, and I mean, they are fabulous. And before I even mention them, you have to do the reservations way in advance. And if you can't do them online, once you book your hotel, you ask your concierge to do it, because you'll never get into these restaurants. The first one is Le Pré Catalan. Now, this is a gorgeous, classic French Michelin star restaurant. It was first opened in 1856, and it's still going strong, and it is gorgeous. It's three Michelin stars top that you can get. The chef is Frederic Anton, and he's been there since 1997, and he's really considered one of France's greatest chefs. They describe the cuisine there as complex without being complicated, brilliant but not demonstrative. And basically, if you want haute French food with a modern but classic presentation, is really how I would describe the La Pré Catalan experience. You'll have a three-hour meal, basically heaven on earth food experience. You could do your whole day. This is like a spiritual experience to eat at a restaurant like this. A tip also, besides the early reservations, which are a must, you have to be well-dressed to dine here, because if you're not, you're going to feel very out of place, and they might even turn you away, because this restaurant is as refined as it gets. So dress very nice when you go here. It's all part of the experience, and it's very expensive, I must say that. But if you want something that you will never forget, a meal you'll never forget, this is a place. Okay, the next one is Astrance, A-S-T-R-A-N-C-E. This restaurant is ranked 18th in the list of the 50 best restaurants in the world. Wow. And it's been on this list for 7 years. It's three-star Michelin chef. His name is Pascal Barbeau. And his cuisine is described as modern French with Asian influences. And I have noticed this in the last 8 to 10 years, that so many of these very famous chefs, especially French chefs, have been very influenced by Japanese cuisine and Asian food techniques, presentation, etc. So there's a fusion that's underneath what's a lot of this modern French cuisine. And I've noticed it's a lot of coming from Asia. But this is a very small restaurant. There's only 25 tables. And like I said, you've got to book your reservations months in advance. There's no set menu. The chef prepares a daily different surprise, quote, menu. So you don't get to choose what you want. You just eat what he gives you. But let me tell you, it is described as an unforgettable culinary experience. And this restaurant, dressy casual. I mean, you don't have to be as dressed up as La Pré Catalan. But the whole thing is the real thing. And the last restaurant is Etude. And now this is actually Japanese cuisine in Paris, which that kind of sounds, well, like, do I want to have pizza in Paris? I mean, it's not the same type of food, but it's just like, I've come to Paris. I want to eat French food. But this is a one-star Michelin restaurant that is gaining in reputation. But this is a Japanese chef, Kosuke Yagajishi. I think that's how you pronounce his name. He's been there since 2013. It's also a small restaurant, but it's very modern and minimalistic. For lunch, there's only two choices. There's a five-course menu, so you don't get to pick what you eat. You either have one of the two five-course menus. The first one is called Symphony, and it's entirely vegan. The second one is called Balades, and it's omnivore menu. I mean, it has meat or whatever with it. Then for dinner, You've got the vegan symphony menu to choose from, or the 8-course tasting menu called the Nocturne. Plus, they've got a fabulous wine list, especially for French Burgundy wines. So this restaurant, the cuisine is really described as refined cuisine that is healthy. It has fabulous reviews. One thing that you have to know, when you make a reservation here, you have to pay 100% deposit. Oh, yes. They don't want any no-shows because it's very small. And he's actually cooking, I think, in front of you, not totally. And here again, it's dressy casual, so it's not real, real dressy. So the 6 Michelin star restaurants in the 16th that I really think are really all good and all different are the Cristal Room, Monsieur Bleu, Le Franc, Le Pré Catalan, Estrance, and Etude. Everyone will give you a different but very fine dining experience. So you can see it's not boring in the 16th.
No, not
They've
at all.
They've got some
My goodness.
Fine things there. All right. Now, one of the distinguishing features, and I've kind of mentioned this, about the 16th arrondissement are its parks and its green spaces, 3 of which really are not to be missed, I think, when exploring this area of Paris for sure. I've already mentioned the Bois de Boulogne. And like I said, it's a central park of Paris. Not only does it have the park, but it does have tennis courts, and I think it has a soccer stadium out there. So there's sports things that go on in one section of it, but this is a huge place. It's very beautiful. The second garden that is also not to be missed, and you probably won't miss it because of what I'm going to share with you, is the Trocadero Gardens. And it's formerly was in front of the Palais de Trocadero, which was originally laid out, if you can believe this, in 1878. A lot of these gardens and things were originally done in the 1800s, and they're still used and enjoyed and beautiful and mature. Just, you can't find that in a lot of places all over the world. And the French really love this, especially. It's part of what makes Paris so beautiful. Then they redid it. It updated it in 1937. But basically, it's beautiful, kind of tiered and terraced landscape architecture. It's got footpaths, and all of this leads down to the Seine River. Garden terraces, sculptures, fountains. They've got English gardens, French gardens. And it's basically this gorgeous, large green area overlooking the Seine with all of this formal and beautiful landscape French design with a stunning view of the Eiffel Tower. It is really the best place to take photos of the Eiffel Tower because what it does, you come off of the hill where this Palais de Charlotte is and it goes down to the Seine River and the Eiffel Tower is right there. I mean, it is right there. So if you go up the hill each stage to take a picture, oh, you take the best selfie pictures of the Eiffel Tower you can get there. It is just stunning. And it's a beautiful place to walk on those paths. I know I stumbled on a couple of sculptures that I just thought were out of this world. One was of Athena, and it was in bronze, and it was just kind of tucked off on one of the paths. So Trocadero Gardens are wonderful, and you probably will go there if you want the best Eiffel Tower photo. Now, on the top of the hill, like I said, they have the Palais de Charlotte. It has more museums in there. That's where the history of man is. Mm. There's another one, I forgot which one, and then the Aquarium of Paris. So this is another big museum area of Paris. I wasn't quite as interested in the history of man versus fashion. I must admit. Okay, then the third garden that I don't think should be missed. Some people might not like it, but it was actually the first thing I did once I checked into the hotel and I hit the streets was the Jardin des Cerises d'Auteuil. And it is Paris's botanical gardens. It was originally designed in 1761 during the reign of Louis IV. That means it's over 350 years old. I mean, that's an old botanical garden. And it's in the traditional French style. You have five large hothouses, beautiful French architecture, like the Grand Palais, or, well, not totally. Some of them are, and some of them are more just simple. But they have rare plants, trees, they have a palm house, and in the palm house, and all these different palms, it's got this gorgeous aviary with all of these singing birds and these little ponds and everything in there. You could spend the whole afternoon just sitting in there relaxing. It's beautiful. Like I said, this might not be the must-do for most solo travelers, but I love gardens and I love botanical gardens. So when I travel, if there's one where I'm traveling and I really have the time, I make the time to go there because I always like it. I'm so happy I went after I made the effort to go. So I've been to Paris many times and never done it. But this time I wanted to go to the Jardin de Cerise de Auteuil because it was in the 16th. And I must say, I've never visited a botanical garden this old. It was uncrowded, serene. And it was very French in detail and feel. They had these beautiful, big vase-like urns that had plantings in them on pedestals outside. And it was just had this blue kind of detail in it, but very French, not Dutch or anything. And just so many French things in the way they do the landscape architecture. I just loved it. So that was a garden that I put on the must-do list for me, and it might interest some of our listeners, but it is special. It is very French, and it's in this very aristocratic area of Paris. So it all fits. So if that's something that you're interested in, you won't be wasting your time. Okay, the last thing is shopping. And here again, I have to admit, this trip, I did all my shopping in the 1st and the 8th arrondissement because there were only a few things I really wanted to get because I've been to Paris so many times and I've gotten what I've wanted, really. But there is one store that I would highly recommend as a must-do if you love high-end designer brand vintage clothing and accessories. This store is called Reciproque. You spell it R-E-C-I-P-R-O-Q-U-E. Well, it is the largest, and it is the most famous luxury consignment store in Paris. It has six different shops that are all right together. Hermès, Chanel, Dior, Yves Saint Laurent, Celine, all of the top international luxury brands, Prada, Valentino, Dolce & Gabbana, you'll see hundreds of scarves, shoes, purses, clothes, accessories, luggage, jewelry, and they're all extremely well preserved. They don't sell anything that smells or is worn. If you like vintage luxury goods, this is going to blow your mind. I mean, it is going to blow your mind. So if you're this type of shopper, you need to plan to spend a whole morning in here because it's like going through a museum and you have to look and just decide and then peel off because you can spend a lot of money. But the prices are good. I wouldn't say they're fabulous, but they're good. I mean, they're really good. You can get a Birkin bag for a lot less than anywhere else, and it is in good condition, and it's Hermes. What can I say? So I think this is a must-do. So that was only the real shopping, but they have lots of boutiques and everything. So if you have 2 weeks to spend in the 16th, then you can go and explore more. I know I wandered into one pet shop. Oh, and of course, I had to buy something for my grand dog, but but they had these beautiful animals, cats and dogs that they were selling only in Paris. You know, the French love their dogs. So just the pet shop was great. And I just happened to wander in there. Okay, well, Catherine, that's the show basically for today. So I would like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. And if you've enjoyed the show, if you've learned something, or if you've been inspired to explore the beautiful, chic, and overlooked area of the 16th arrondissement in Paris, we would appreciate you giving us a thumbs up, a share, and most importantly, to subscribe to Solo Travel Talk. Because when you subscribe, that helps push out the show to a much broader audience internationally so others can benefit from our content. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we know that you love hearing this information from Astrid, and Astrid has a tremendous amount of resources for you as a solo traveler. In fact, she's got a whole page on her website, astridtravel.com, dedicated to these resources, including the packing list and the budget tool. We love that budget tool. All you have to do is go to astridtravel.com/resources, and all that information is there for you right away. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify. We love you, Spotify. Any fine place that podcasts can be found. Thank you for taking us on this tour of the 16th arrondissement, Astrid. We hope you had a great time with us here on Solo Travel Talk. We'll see you next week. Take care. Goodbye. Au revoir, I should say.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or solo travel advisors, visit our website, astridtravel.com.